Sorry. So the as we go through Bereishis, we're trying to address different stories in Bereishis and throughout the Chumash that we may not understand so well based on our previous explorations of these stories. So the next story, which is one of the most difficult ones in the entire Torah, is the story of the Chayin of the Eitz Hadas, the Chayin of Adam and Chava. It's something which, on the one hand, had a tremendous impact on us this very day. I mean, the world is as it is because of this chait. On the other hand, it's something which seems to be so mysterious, so out there, so hard to understand, that we really have very little concept of what happened, what they did, what was the challenge, why did Hashem make it that way, etc. So there's much written about it. There's much that we can't understand, as much we can't understand. And well, let's try our best to try to understand some sources and get through this story to have some deeper understanding of what's happening. I made a packet. It might take us a week or two to get through this packet. And there's more beyond this as well. But I want to try to go through it based on the words of the Rishonim and the Midrashim. I mean, the best way to approach these types of topics is to go back to the earliest sources we can find and see how they understood it. So I tried to go through the story just with the Mefarshim and just pick out the different quotes from Mefarshim that kind of describe, you know, each part of the story. So we're going to try to work on that and just to understand, you know, bit by bit, piece by piece, what this story is all about. So I think the first thing I want to do before we go to the sheets is just read through the psukim and see what the psukim say about the story, and then we'll start working through the sheets and look at each source one by one. So I'm just going to, it's not in the sheets yet, but we'll get to the sheets in a minute. I'm just going to start reading from Bereishis Perek Beis. The first mention you have of the Eitz Hadas is Perek Beis Pasuk Tes. And it says, V'yatzmach Hashem lokim min ha'adamah. So Hashem sprouted forth from the earth, Kol Eitz Nechma Lamare, all trees that were beautiful to see, V'tov L'machal, and they're good to eat, V'etz HaChayim B'Silch HaGan, and the tree of life was inside the garden, V'etz Hadas Tovara, and also the Eitz Hadas Tovara. So this pasuk doesn't say much more than that. It says Hashem created all the trees, and then it singles out two trees, Eitz HaChayim and Eitz Hadas Tovara. So there's some tree called the tree of knowledge of good and evil. And that's really the subject of our discussion. What is that tree, and what's so terrible about eating from that tree? So that's pasuk Tes. Now after that, the Torah goes on and discusses other topics. It talks about these rivers that came forth from Gan Eden. We're going to skip over that. Eventually, it discusses Hashem placing Adam into Gan Eden. And then it says again in Pasuk Tes Zayin, V'etzav Hashem lokim al ha'adam lemor, b'kol etz hagan achol tochel. Hashem commanded to Adam, you can eat from all the trees of the garden, etz hadas tovara, but from the etz hadas tovara, lo sochal menu, don't eat from it, ki b'yom acholcha menu mos tamus, because the day you eat from it, you shall die. So Hashem now gives Adam his first prohibition. He gives him an isser. He says, you may not eat from this tree. He tells him the punishment. If you eat from this tree, you're going to die. So there's something bad about this tree, apparently. And if you eat from this tree, you'll live. If you eat from it, you will die. That's Pasuk Yud Zayin. After that, the Torah continues and discusses the creation of Chava. It's not good to be alone. So Hashem created for him Chava as a wife. And then I'm going to skip all the way down to the end of Perek Beis, Pasuk Chafei, it says, Vayushneim Arumim, Adam Ishto, they are both naked, the man and his wife, they were not embarrassed. Which leads up to the result of the chait where they became embarrassed. Perek Gimel. Hanachash hay arum mikol chayas asadeh. The nachash, the snake, was arum, most translated as was clever, was smart, and more so than all the other animals of the field. I mean, it's pointed out the contrast. The previous pasuk uses the word arum as naked, v'yushneim arumim, and then the next pasuk calls the nachash arum. But he wasn't naked; he was clever. So there's kind of a play on words over there. But he was very, very clever from all the animals that Hashem created. V'yomer elisha, and he approached the woman and said to the woman, "Af ki amar elokim lo sochlu mikoy tzagan." He says, "Af," no, even or also, Hashem said, "Don't eat from all the trees of the garden." So Nachash, in his deception, begins by saying something that's totally false. We saw that Hashem told Adam, eat from all the trees, just not this one. But Nachash opens up and tells Chava, Hashem said not to eat any trees. So she says, that's ridiculous. Vatomer Haisha El Nachash, so she said back to the snake, she said, no, we're allowed to eat from the trees of the garden. You're wrong. That's just false. And then next pasuk, Priya Eitz Asher Basoch HaGan, but from the fruits of the tree in the middle of the garden, Amar Elokim lo soch lumenu, you can't eat from it. Velo sigubo, and she adds in something, you can't touch it either. Pentemusun, lest you die. So we'll talk about this more, but Chava mentions something that Adam and Hashem never said. Hashem never said, don't touch the tree. Hashem said, don't eat from the tree. We read that back earlier in Perek Beis. Chava, for some reason, tells the snake, you can't touch the tree either. We'll have to figure out why that is. Where did she get that from? Who told her? Why did she think there's some prohibition of touching the tree? Then further, the snake said to the woman, Lomos Tumusun, you're not going to die. So he doesn't seem to have any sort of proof to that from the Pasuk. He just says, don't worry, you're not going to die. No problems. And then he explains. And it seems to be the Nachash is trying to tell her that Hashem was fooling you. Hashem was deceiving you. Hashem warned you not to eat from the tree and told you you might die to scare you. But Hashem had some other motivation. What was Hashem's motivation? Ki yodeh Elokim, Hashem knows. Ki b'yom achochem imenu, the day you eat from this tree, v'nifkachu einechem, your eyes will open up. B'yisem kelohim, or kelohim. You will become either like godly or like angels, depending on how you learn it. Yodeh tovara, who know good and evil. So Nachash is telling Chava that Hashem is trying to keep you from eating from this. Because Hashem has his own motivation. Hashem is the powerful one right now. But if you eat from the tree, you'll become powerful too. So Hashem kind of tricked you and said that the tree is going to be a dangerous tree. Don't eat it because you're going to die. But Hashem was just trying to fool you so you don't become as powerful as him. So that was the Nachash's sales pitch to Chava. Batera isha kitova eats the machol. So now the woman saw that the tree was good to eat. V'chisava hu le'enayim, and it was a desire to the eyes. V'nechmada eitz lehaskil, and it was a beautiful tree for the intelligence. V'tikach mipirio v'tochal, she took from the fruit and ate it. V'titen gam le'isha imah v'yochal, and then she gave it also to her husband to eat as well. So she ate, and then she decided to give to Adam as well. So we have to figure out, like, we understand that she ate, why'd she have to give to her husband? Because once she ate, it seems like she would know already that the tree was not the right thing to do. So why now does she have to pass on that avera to her husband as well? So we'll talk about that. And then what happened is, their eyes both were opened, and they knew that they were naked. They stitched some fig leaves to cover up their exposed bodies. They made themselves these belts. So the story ends, for some reason, the result of eating from this tree is the knowledge that they were naked. So the story began, they were naked and were not ashamed. And then it ends, well, they realized they were naked and became ashamed. So why is that the result of eating from this tree? How does that fit the story? After that, the Torah goes through the punishments. Hashem comes to the Gan, and Hashem confronts them on their chet, and Hashem punishes Chava and the snake and Adam. And there's one last thing to add in to the story. You know, at the end of the discussion, Hashem has a concern. Hashem says that I don't want them to eat anymore from Eitz Chaim, from the tree of life, because that will cause them to live eternally. And the Pasuk says, this is in Pasuk Chaf Beis, Vayomer Hashem Elokim, Hein Adam Hayaka Acha Mimenu. Hashem Elokim says that Adam has become like one of us. I mean, the fact that Adam ate from this tree has given him some sort of new status that he's referred to as one of us, meaning godly or angelic in some way. Hamadas Tovara, in that he knows good and evil. Now he might send out his hand and take from the tree of life, and he'll eat and live forever. So Hashem did not want Adam to live forever under these conditions. Meaning, if he didn't eat from the tree of Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra, then he could live forever. But now that he ate from this tree, Hashem said, we can't have him live forever, and therefore we have to throw him out of Gan Eden so he doesn't touch the Eitz Chaim. So those are the points in the story we have to discuss. And we cut out some psukim, which were side points. This is the main story flow. So I want to go back through it now, pasuk by pasuk, and just get down some more details, understand more what's happening. I mean, the story itself, it's not a long story. It's a very difficult story. It's a very strange story. But yet, the entire future of the human race was impacted by this story. So, and we have to figure out, what was the challenge? What was the tree? Why did Hashem create it? What was the punishment for eating from the tree? How does it all fit in? So let's go back to these packets from the first page. So what I did is I put the psukim, in italics on top, and then we went in each pasuk has sources that refer to that pasuk to help us understand it better. So we'll try to go through them piece by piece and understand what they're trying to explain. So the first pasuk, this is in Bereishis Perek Beis Pasuk Tes, and this pasuk describes that Hashem sprouted forth from the ground the trees, including the Eitz Chaim and the Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra. So the first question I want to address with these first two sources is, what kind of tree was this? And there's a big misconception out there in the, at least certainly the non-Jewish world, that it was an apple, right? Which is not true. There's not a single source that it was an apple. So anyone who says Adam's apple, that's not a true source. So what was the tree? So the first one is a Gemara, Maseches Brachos. Ilan she'achal menu Adam Rishon, the tree that Adam ate from, what kind of tree was it? Rav Meir Omer Gefen Haya. Rav Meir says it's actually a grapevine. She'ein lecha davar she'mev yivolok ala Adam, because there's nothing that brings anguish to a person, el yayin, like wine does. We know when people are drunk, you know, in inappropriate ways, what it can do. So wine is something which itself has negative impacts upon people. So he says it makes sense that this was a grapevine. Shenemar, as it says, v'yish minayim yishkar. As we know that it says by Noach, he drank from the wine and became drunk. So Meir wants to say that it was a grapevine. Reb Nechemya says, Te'ina, he said it was actually a fig tree. How do you know it's a fig tree? Shebedavar says, Kalkulubo niskanu. Because that thing which caused them to be corrupt, that thing fixed them. As it says, v'yemar v'yispru alei se'ina. They stitched fig leaves as their belts. So why would they use the fig leaf as their belt? Rashi actually quotes this as well. It's because the fig caused them their downfall, so they used the figs to try to repair the problem. That was the that's the opinion of fig. Rav Yehuda Omer Chita, Rav Yehuda says it's actually wheat. Now the question asked on this is that wheat's not a tree. You could argue that a grapevine is a tree, but certainly a wheat's not a tree. So many sources say that before the chait, wheat actually grew on trees. The wheat plant was actually more tree-like than plant-like. So Rabbi Yehuda says it was actually wheat. Why was it wheat? In a tinok yodeh lekros abba v'ima, because a child doesn't know how to call out abba and ima, ach yitam tam dagin, until they taste wheat, until it's grain. I mean, grain is considered a food that brings upon a person chachma. I mean, children develop more as they, I guess, enter into the world of eating grains, is the point that Gemara is making. So if this is the Eitz Hadas, the tree of knowledge, it must be that the food that it was, the food that gives you knowledge. And wheat gives knowledge, so therefore it must be wheat. So those are three opinions. And if you look at number two, there's a fourth opinion. Rabbi Abba de Akko Amar, Rabbi Abba de Avako says, this is a Medrash in Brachos, he says it was an Esrog tree. Hu adichsiv, this is what it says in the Pasuk, Vatera isha ki tov ha'etz v'gomer. The woman saw that the tree was good to eat. Now, if you remember, a couple months ago, we discussed one of the bloopers of Brachos, which was when Hashem created all the trees. The trees were supposed to be, the bark was supposed to taste like, the wood was supposed to taste like the fruit. And we said that the ground rebelled, the Chazal say, and the trees now, the wood tastes like wood, and the fruit tastes like fruit, but the wood doesn't taste like fruit. We said the one exception to that is the Esrog tree. On the Esrog tree, the wood does taste like the fruit. And I've never tasted it before, but I have smelled it, and it does smell very citrusy, the wood. So I can imagine the taste would be citrus-like. So about the Eitz Hadas as well, it says Tov ha'etz l'ma'achal. Literally, the tree was good to eat. I mean, not the fruit, but the wood. The wood itself had good flavor. Amar amre seir ezu elilan. So go and look out. Which tree is it that exists in the world today? She'etz o'nechal kapiriel. That the wood is edible like the fruit. Vein atmotzi also. You'll find it's the esrog tree. So we have four opinions. We have grapes, figs, wheat, or esrog. No apples. Right, that's not in there. So that's some misconception in the world out there. I'm not sure where that came from. So that's just an important point to know. Now, why does it matter which fruit the tree was? So I want to get to that, but probably in a couple weeks from now. That's not for today. But the Maral discusses at length on the significance of what kind of fruit they ate. So I do want to talk about that. But for now, let's just keep that as a detail, that the tree was either a grapevine, a fig tree, a wheat tree, which existed back then, or an esrog tree.
What's a wheat tree?
Well, they don't exist anymore. Wheat, it's like flour. But in those days, wheat was on a tree. Before the chait, wheat grew on trees. Okay, so we'll get back to this, Mirtz Hashem, at some point soon. But we'll move to the number three. Now, the big question here, besides the fruit of the tree, is what exactly does it mean? This is really one of the central points. What does it mean, Eitz Hadas Tov V'Ra? It's a tree of knowledge of good and evil. What does it mean to know good and evil? And furthermore, before they ate from the tree, they didn't have any knowledge? I mean, Hashem created the human being to be, you know, the primary force in this world. So it can't be the human being was created with no knowledge. I mean, we thrive on our seichel. Rashi even says in the beginning of Bereishis that when Hashem makes the human being, B'tzelem Elokim, Rashi says, L'havin l'haskil, we have the ability to understand. So it can't be that before we ate from the Eitz HaDas, we had no Das, and only after we got Das, because that doesn't fit the role of a human being. We're not animals, we're people. So we have to understand, what is the Das we're referring to? And what were we like before, and what changed after? So I have a few sources for this. Let's look at the first number three is Rashi. So Rashi says a short line describing it a little bit, but we'll talk about it more. Rashi says, this is going back in the Pasuk, Lo Yisbo Shashu. It's talking about why they weren't ashamed for being naked. Rashi says, V'yav pishinasna bo das lekros shemos. So Adam, even though Adam had knowledge to name all the animals, the Pasuk says beforehand, the Adam named every single animal in the world. So he must have been a pretty smart person. It wasn't just like giving out random words, but he actually was able to size up the essence of the animal and give it the proper title. So if that's the case, Adam was smart. So what exactly did the Eitz HaDas offer him? So it says, Lo nasim bo yetzer hara, ad she'achlu min ha'etz. The yetzer hara was not given to Adam to eat from the tree. V'nichnas bo yetzer hara, v'yada ma ben tov l'ra. So once he ate from the tree, the yetzer hara entered into the person, and at that point understood what was the difference between good and evil. So what does Rashi mean here? So there is a point to be made, and Rav Dessler points it out, again, I want to get to that as well as time goes on. But he says that before the chet, there's no internal yetzer hara. I mean, right now, yetzer hara is, I want to do X, but it's wrong, so I'm going to hold back. But I'm talking about myself. I want to speak lashon hara, but I know it's the wrong thing, so I'm not going to do it. But I'm saying it from first person. Before the chet, it wasn't I, it was an external force, like the Nachash, coming to me and say, you should speak Lashon Hara. I say, no, I shouldn't. No, you should. And you have to convince from the outside. That's a much harder sell, because it's not my own personal desires, it's something external to me. So, on the one hand, we're saying the Yetzer Hara only entered into Adam after the Chet. But then we mentioned this idea of knowing good and evil. So, what this means, we'll elaborate upon it more. But the Netziv in HaMikdavar, he explains that before the chet, it wasn't I had personal opinions. You know, Hashem, the Adam was connected with Hashem. And there was right and there was wrong. It wasn't a matter of my feelings, what do I think, what's my opinion, how do I view this. It wasn't like there's that I feel personally, you know, there's good and there's bad. But rather, there was facts, there was reality. We'll see that the Rambam talks about it, there was MS and there was Sheker. But that was it. So either it's true or it's false, but good and bad are opinion. Good and bad are relative. You know, good and bad are something which is coming from my end, whereas it's either true or it's fantasy, what was the world before the chet. So when Rashi says that once they ate from the tree, the Yetzer Hara entered in, and now they know it's between good and evil, it means, again, according to the Netziv, that now human beings have a personal opinion on the matter. So even if you do the right thing, let's say, you know, Hashem says that it's usher to eat shrimp. So I might say, well, you know what? It looks pretty good to me. And, you know, I did some research and doctors say it might be, you know, healthy to eat. And I think it's good. But Hashem said not to, so I should avoid it. So I'm giving my opinion on the matter rather than saying, you know, eating shrimp is something which is just, it's impossible. It's sheker. It's not something that's there's nothing I can gain from it because Hashem said not to. It's a very different approach, because now I know tov v'ra. Now I have an opinion on good and evil in my own mind, and that could lead me or mislead me to do the wrong things. So I think that's what Rashi is hitting at. Now the next point is the Ramban. And the Ramban in these matters, very often, you know, he's the one looked at as giving us, you know, the real definition. Like when it comes to learning Chumash, you know, the Ramban's kind of looked at as one of the primary sources of any of these concepts. So this Ramban's a very important Ramban, the way he describes it. And the Ramban first brings a different opinion, he argues with. In the first paragraph here, I'll just paraphrase it for you. The Ramban says that some say that the whole problem of the fruits of the Eitz HaDas Tov V'Ra is that they brought about physical desires. That was it. The desire of a man to a woman. That's it. And the Ramban says that can't be true, because it's described as hisim kelu kim yodi tavrab, you'll become godly to know good and evil. And if that's all it's doing, that's not described as yodi tavrab, it doesn't fit the language of the Torah and what it's describing. So Ramban rejects that as the issue over here. So you skip the second paragraph, it says v'yafa be'inai. what makes sense in my eyes is the following. So now the Ramban's going to give his approach to what it means Tov V'ra. He says, Ki Adam Hayose Betivo Masheroi Lasus Kvia Toledes. Before the Chait, a human being used to naturally do his or her job, as we're supposed to. Kasher Yasu Shemayim Echol Tzvam, like the heavens and all the stars do. Poli Emesh, Pulasim Emesh, Lishams Tafkidam. As we say, this is the Bracha on Kish Levana. They do truth, their actions are truth, and they never change their role, their job. Meaning that, look at the world. Nature functions as Hashem made it function. It never deviates. Animals do their role. Animals have instincts. Animals follow a certain pattern in life, and they don't deviate. The laws of nature, Hashem put into place, they don't deviate. A seed you put in the ground, it will grow. If it's an apple seed, it'll grow an apple tree. It'll produce apples. And apples will have the red skin on them. And it'll have the same type of flesh. It'll do its job always. Unless something unless we come in and we alter it, or we do something wrong with it, it'll do its job. So the human being before the chait, we acted in that same way, like the rest of nature. We did our job. Our job as human beings is to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We can discuss more what our job is, but we did our job. And other creatures in this world, they don't have opinions on their jobs. I don't think cats wake up in the morning and say, "Oh, I hate being a cat." I don't want to eat any mice today. They don't do that. They do their job. They don't have opinions. They just do as they're supposed to do. But the fruit of this tree, it would create in a person their own personal desires. Shivkru ochlav bedaver. That we should make choices and choose something or its opposite. It's a similar point as we said before. It's developing personal opinions, but it's more than that. It's that we're going to develop our opinions and act upon them, even though we're deviating from our purpose Hashem gave us in this world. Because the word das, so we translate it as knowledge, but very often you find in the Torah and in Chazal that das means will. Right, it doesn't just mean my knowledge, it means my will. What's my will? As it says in the Gemara, Loshinu el Shadaito Lachzor, there means that you're planning to, your will is to return. And he brings some other examples. I'm going to skip over the examples as to where you find the word das, meaning not just knowledge, but a desire, a will. So he's saying, Yisudas Tovara doesn't mean it's a tree that gives you knowledge, it's a tree that gives you the desire for good and evil. I mean, now we're going to have to make choices. Now we're going to see things in front of us that confuse us, that I think it's good, Hashem says it's not, I think it's bad, Hashem says it's good, what do I do? And suddenly I have a chance to deviate from my purpose in this world. Skipping down a few more lines. The three lines from the bottom of this piece, where I put the periods there. V'efshir sh'niskaven akasav inyan hazeh, and it seems that the pasuk is actually referring to this idea. It says in Koheles that Hashem made us straight, and we seek out all these different calculations. I mean, we complicate things. Hashem made us straight with a purpose. You'll do as you're supposed to do, similar to everything else in the world. Animals do as they're supposed to do, nature does as they're supposed to do. But we, from our own end, based on eating from the Eitz HaDaas, is what we're saying right now, we now suddenly complicate our lives, and we give ourselves all these calculations of what we should and shouldn't do. Is it right? Is it wrong? Is it good? Is it evil? Hayosher sheyechos derech achas yishara. The idea of yashar, straight, is that we are made to go on one straight path, to do the right thing always. V'habiksha cheshbonos rabim, shivakas lo maisim mishtanim b'vchir menu. This idea of that we seek out different calculations is that we search out different deeds with our own free choice. So in the Ramban's wording, the way Ramban's describing it, is that before we ate from Eitz HaDaas, our natural inclination was to do what was right, always. Now obviously we had a free choice. Chava chose to eat from the tree, so we do have free choice. But the natural inclination in a person was, I do what's right. It wasn't as complex, is it right, is it wrong, I don't want to, I do want to, should I, shouldn't I, that wasn't part of the cheshbon. It was, I do what's right, like anything else. Now, certainly, you could take an animal and you can train it to do something different than its routine is, but you have to knock it out of its routine because its instinct is to follow its routine. So the human being had the routine that I do the right things always, and Eitz Hadas, you know, knocked that out of whack. And now our habits, our natural inclinations are to do what we want to do. It's not naturally, automatically the right thing. It's as we desire, as we will, that's what we do. So that's the Ramban's. Again, all these things relate. This is the Ramban really puts a lot of more of a definition to the topic. Now the next thing is the Sfarno. And again, I think they all speak to each other. Number five is the Sfarno. And he says it, I guess, in more practical terms, and gives us also a good definition of what's happening here. He says, it's a das. So that first piece, he just says the idea of das is it makes you pay attention. Meaning it makes you actually pay attention to good and bad. So the idea of das, he says, doesn't mean it's knowledge. There's a certain focus it gives. Now look at the next thing, tov v'ra. He says, so what does it do? Levchor ha'arev af b'shiyazik. I think he says this beautifully. The Yetzer Hara tov v'ra now makes us choose that which is pleasant for us, even though it's damaging. V'limos ha'bilti arev, and to despise that which is unpleasant, al b'shimo, even though it's beneficial to us. And to me, this really encapsulates Avodas Hashem. That our job is to say that even though what I'm about to do may not be what I enjoy, might be difficult for me, might be a challenge for me, it might be something I feel is not really what I want to do right now, but I have to do it because Hashem said it's beneficial. And sometimes, but rather what we do is that we choose those things we find to be easier, more pleasant, more enjoyable, even though we know in the long term they're going to be damaging. And that's before the Itzadas Tovara, we wouldn't have done that because it's kind of silly to do. You know, we are benefiting in the short term and we're destroying our future. We know that's foolish, but we do it all the time. You know, we say some Lashon Hara, and right now we want to say it, but we know it's going to hurt someone else, destroy a relationship, you know, cause much bigger problems than we're ready to handle. But we did it because right now it was pleasant for us to say. Right? That's something we do all the time. We might make a bracha, and we're in a rush, so we say it really fast without kavana, even though we know that's not the right thing to do. But we could take extra 5 seconds, even though it's more difficult, it takes more patience and more focus, make good bracha, and know that we've done something which will last with us eternally. But we always do things which we choose which is pleasant for us, despite the fact we know it's going to be damaging in the long term. So the tov v'ra, again, I think it all relates, is that now we have things in front of us. Until this point, a human being would never choose something which was pleasant if he knew it was damaging. Yeah?
So, couldn't you argue that the Bechira, the merit for the Bechira after the Eitz Hadas was bigger than the merit before?
Yes, you could argue that, and it could be you're right, but it still doesn't make it the right thing to do.
No, right. It's like it's an interesting thing because you're saying that the inclination of the human being always was to do the right thing.
Right.
But then once we ate from the Eitz Hadas, now the inclination becomes a dilemma, so to speak.
But now choosing the right thing is a much greater choice.
But it's a bigger choice now. So
right.
The choice becomes, it's almost a bigger avod Hashem to make the correct choice than to make before where it wasn't. You know what I mean?
I don't see it exactly.
That kind of thing, a person whose natural inclination to chesed versus the person who's not. The
right.
The person who's not gets more...
Correct. So some say, it's hard to fit into the psukim, but some say that what they did was lishma. They were trying to do the l'shem shemayim. Why? Because they understood that if they make the challenge bigger, right, they can accomplish much more in the long term. They'll get more schar, they'll bring more kiddushim shemayim. They understood that. The problem was Hashem said not to. That was the problem. But I think you're right. I think that's correct. That after the chait, you know, the choices we make, being that they're more difficult, they might give us more schar. They might be accomplished more. But it doesn't mean the chait they did was the right thing to do. You know. But some actually say what they were mechavin l'shem shemayim because they wanted to make themselves a more challenging avoda, so that when they overcame those wrong choices, they would accomplish much more with their correct choice and bring much more kiddushim shemayim to the world. So there is definitely an argument like that, but doesn't justify their action. But again, I think the Sforno, you know, in his, you know, short one line over here, he packs in so much, which for us is such a lesson. Because if we sit back and think about it in life, when we make the wrong choices, how does it work? Usually, those wrong choices are that we're choosing something which is easier or more pleasant, and ignoring the long term effects. And the way that life should be is that we look at the long term and what's right in the bigger picture despite the fact that it's challenging right now. So that's how the Sforno puts it. And this last piece on this topic is number 6. Abinu Bechaya, essentially he's quoting the Rambam. So what we're about to read really is the Rambam's take on the matter. And again, as I said, they all relate, but each Rishon gives their own like unique perspective on it, but each one relates. They're all hitting on the same point. So he says, Nira, Ki kodem cheto shel adam, nohesa lo maila ladas lahavchin, bein tov l'ras. So he says that before the chet, Adam did not have, he wasn't on the level, meaning that there was some level achieved to discern between good and evil. So he has a question. He says, well, it seems that Adam actually grew from the chet. Meaning before the chet, Adam did not understand good and evil. And now he understands that. Well, it sounds like he got to a higher level now. He understands more. We always look at understanding as a better thing. You know, so he's more aware of the world around him. He's more aware of the way that the world functions. So we have a kasha now, because chote niskar, it sounds like a sinner is gaining from it. How can it? This is a question the Gemara will ask occasionally. How can you have a sinner gain? It can't be that through your chet you gain more. So it says, because he's getting a certain power, a certain level after the chet that he didn't have before the chet. So that's the Rambam's question. And move on, Libazeh. So he says, this is how I can understand it. It doesn't mean that before the chet, Adam had no seichel like an animal. And this was the question we asked before. If he didn't have the itza das, does it mean he had no das? Was he stupid? Was he like an animal, just followed instincts? Did not have a human mind? What does that mean? Zeno, so that's impossible. Ki perish reisim kelo kim inyano kitargumo ton kirav revaya chachman etav levish vari kamasabriya ba adam shiab bal seichel. Certainly, the purpose of human being in this world is that they should have a seichel. Like we said, we are created different than animals because animals don't have the human mind. The human mind is our advantage. And I've mentioned before, you know, most animals are much more powerful than us in so many ways. They're faster, they're stronger, they're more fierce, they have better sense of sight, they're hearing, they can build, beavers can build dams, bees can build beehives. We can't do a lot of these things. For us to build a dam like a beaver would take an engineering degree, which they don't have, and they could do it. For us to build a beehive to that precision, I don't know if we can even do. Maybe slowly in a lab, piece by piece, you know, over a series of, I don't know, years, maybe they could, but we can't do it. What we have is our minds. That's what we have, the animals don't have. So the human being was created with that mind. So what does it mean we didn't have das before the chet? But Selma Seichel, since we have Selma Elokim, the Rambam says that Selma Elokim means the mind. And Hashem gave Adam commands because he had a Seichel. And we don't find Hashem giving any commands to the animals in Gan Eden, because animals don't have a Seichel, they don't get mitzvahs either. Hashem doesn't speak or give mitzvahs to animals, not to anybody who has no Seichel. And this is the Rambam's really important and big point. He says, but the seichel, what it can do, this is before the chet, is it distinguishes between emes and sheker, what's true and what's false, what's real and what's imaginary. But knowing between good and evil, this is not something which is of the intellect, not objective. Because we're not going to say, oh, the heavens are beautiful and the land is ugly. Rather, you'll say there's emes and sheker. Meaning the true take upon the world. Now, we're very, very biased based on our situation because we're after the chet. But the true take on the world, like we said before, is that there's true and there's false. It's black and white. There wasn't gray areas. There wasn't opinions. The idea of good and evil. So I can say it's really good to be spiritual. It's really bad to be materialistic. So that might be true, and that definitely fits the Hashkafa of the Torah. But those are matters, we're not saying true and false, we're not saying objective facts, we're saying opinions, we're saying things that we feel are right and wrong. So we say the Torah says so, so we call it a fact. But that's not our viewpoint. Our viewpoint is, this is how we see it, so it's relative. Before the chet, it was very clear, there's emes and there's sheker. Meaning that doing a mitzvah, it's a reality, It gives you eternal reward. It builds you as a person. That's real. Doing an Aveira is false. There's nothing to gain from it. There's no sense of pleasure. There's no sense of reality. It's just going to bring you down to the dumps, and that's falsehood. There's nothing. It's not realistic. It's imaginary. We know it's imaginary and it's real. And that's how people would live life. They would know that at any time there's a temptation for bad, they'll say, well, that's silly. It's pretend. It's not reality. I'm not going to go for the Monopoly money when I have real money over here. Right? So we know it's pretend. So if I have a $100 bill lying here, there's a $1,000 Monopoly money over here. So obviously I'll go for the $100 bill over here because I know it's real. And that's how we looked at everything before the chait. Everything before the chait was a sense of reality and a sense of sheker. Once the chait came in, now suddenly we inject into our mindset this idea of good and evil. This idea of, again, like we said before, opinions, this idea of, well, even though that's a $100 bill, but this one looks so nice and shiny and it has more zeros on it, and so that's obviously a funny example because we know it's pretend, but that's how we look at things, and that's how we live life. We choose the Monopoly money over the real money. That's what we do all the time. You know, we choose that which is quick and easy versus that which is the right thing to do. You know, we choose to do what's pleasant for us versus that which is the right thing to do for us. And that's how life is lived, because now we suddenly have this sense of good and evil beyond the sense of emes v'sheker. So this is the Rambam's very famous point, and again, it really gives us a good glimpse as to what the Itzadas Tov HaRa does to a person. So the Rambam continues, V'nekodem ha-chet ha-kulo sichli eloki. Before the chet, Adam was entirely sichli eloki, of the divine intellect. Lo haya mis'asik b'dvarim gufnim. He wasn't involved in physical matters. Lo yadeusam, and he didn't pay attention to them. V'gili erva etzel lo haya be'en av davar maguna kim kesharivam. Now the Rambam is going to address this idea of the shame of being naked, and which we'll see others later discuss as well. The Rambam says that before the chet, anything that the human being did physically, it wasn't because they had a personal desire in it. It was because they were doing what they're supposed to do. So they didn't see anything shameful about being naked, because, he'll say in a second, it was like, we're not ashamed of our hands because we don't feel our hands are doing anything animalistic, not doing things which are, you know, self-focused. Our hands are there to do things which we're supposed to do. We're ashamed of being naked because we feel those parts of our bodies are the more animalistic parts. That's where that sense comes from. But that wasn't true before the chait, because as the Rambam says, there was nothing animalistic in being naked. It was like any other limbs. Kasher chatav hisikoh chataiva. But once they did the sin, and now they had this taiva within, they had this desire. I mean, they looked at things that they seemed to be pleasurable, even though they were bad and false. V'nimshach achar tanuge haguf, and they were drawn after the pleasures of the body. Mera ki tova eitz lemaychol. As it says, that they saw that the tree was good to eat, and it was taiva, it was desire in their eyes. Amnenash miyah, they're punished immediately. Suddenly this divine outlook on the world of true and false was lifted from them. And now they only look at the world from a much more physical perspective. Beteva hamidos hayofi v'chir. And now suddenly, you know, pretty and ugly, good and bad, desire come into play, but true and false takes a backseat. And true and false for us is a struggle to get to that recognition, because usually we're looking at things based on our desires and our opinions, and not based on absolute truth. And that's why the result of the sin was Yodei Tov V'Ra, not Emes V'Sheker. Because as the Rambam said, before the sin, they had plenty of das, they're very intelligent beings, and the intelligence was they can discern between true and false. But after the sin, what crept in was this distinction of good versus evil, and that was the problem. So that's the Rambam's words. I'm going to skip the rest of the Rambam there. But so now we've seen one, two, three, four, about four sources on what Tov V'Ra means, and each one says their own take on the matter, but it's really all the same point, just kind of different perspectives. It really is. It's about the idea that before the chait, things were very, very clear, objective, right, wrong. We instinctively went on the straight path. We weren't drawn aside by our desires, by our opinions, you know, by our own personal take on the world. We're taking the divine approach. Then after the chait, suddenly we have opinions of good and evil, and nice and not nice, and pretty and not pretty, and our desires take over us, and now things are chishbonos rabim, things aren't so clear anymore. You know, we don't have this clear discernment of right and wrong because we have so much of a confusion which creeps in. That's even kind of seen symbolically in the punishment given to Adam. You know, after Adam sins, so Adam's given punishments in Chava and the Nachash. The punishment to Adam has to do with the fact that all of his crops are going to grow thorns and weeds, which on a more symbolic level means that before the chait, the food was clear. This is food. There's nothing mixed in. There's no confusion. After the chait, suddenly, you go to pick your crops, and you have to be able to sort through all the thorns and all the weeds just to get to the good food, which means that there's going to be a lot of other stuff mixed in when you're trying to get to that which is right. It's not a clear path anymore. So you kind of see Mida Kenega Mida in his punishment. The next Pope's Tipsukim here. So this is the command to Adam not to eat from the Eitz HaDaas, and the punishment, if you eat from the Eitz HaDaas, you will certainly die. So the question is, what does it mean you will die? And the because we do see that the day they ate, they did not die. We'll talk about that more. When Chava and Adam ate from the Eitz HaDaas, they didn't die that day. They lived another 930 years. That's a long time afterwards. He didn't die immediately. But it says, "Biyom acholcha mostamus." The day you eat, you will die. So how do we understand that? We'll see later sources as well. That was part of the Nachash's trick. Because if Chava thought she'd die immediately, and she thought you couldn't touch the tree, so he pushed her against the tree, and she touched it, and she didn't die on the spot. So she said, oh, Ms. Nachash might be right. Hashem is trying to trick me. We'll talk more about that. But we have to understand what is the death that's referred to in this pasuk. So this is the Ramban. Source number 7. So the Rambam explains, he interprets it to mean that when you eat from the tree, you will become a ben mavis, a deserving of death. I mean, it doesn't mean you will die immediately. It means at that moment, you will now be liable to death. Like it says in Melachim, the day that you go out and walk around, you shall know that you will have to die. I mean, you're not going to die on that day, but now you're liable to death. You've done a capital crime. It doesn't mean you'll die immediately. It doesn't just mean that you know you will die. Because everyone knows they're going to die at some point. Everyone knows they're going to die. It means that you're going to be guilty and liable to death by the king on that day. And the king will kill you when he desires. And he quotes from the Torah many places where it says you will die. It doesn't mean on the spot, but it means that now you are liable to a death penalty. So the Rambam says on a simple level, just understand what it means on a simple pshat. It doesn't mean that you eat from the tree, you're going to drop dead on the spot. That's not what it means. It means that when you eat from this tree, you will now be liable to a death penalty from Shemayim. Now when will that come? When Hashem decides it should come. Just like he quoted a few places in the Torah where there is the idea of Misa B'dei Shemayim, that Hashem does hold you culpable for death, but it doesn't happen on the spot. It will happen when Hashem desires to execute you. So that's the simple meaning in the pasuk. So, again, one of the deceptions of the Nachash may have been that he was trying to tell Chava you should die on the spot, whereas that's not the pshat in the pasuk in the Ramban. It doesn't mean you'll die on the spot, it means that you'll now be liable to death. So now the Ramban's going to address the question, was Adam supposed to live forever when he was first created? I mean, it doesn't say that anywhere in the Torah, and it's something that we're familiar with because Chazal talk about it. But when Adam was he created in a way that he would have lived eternally? Is it that death came to the world through the Eitz HaDaas, and that there be no death? Or is it something else? So I think many of us are familiar with the idea that Adam would have lived forever had it not been for the Eitz HaDaas. But the Ramban says there is another approach to this. V'adas anshei teva. So based on the scientific approach, he says, Hay Adam mu'utad lemisa mitchilas ha'yetzira. The human being was destined for death from creation. Why? Because a human being is a complex being. Meaning the way the world works is that anything which is made up of a lot of pieces eventually will deteriorate. You know, it'll come apart. You know, that's why the most simple things, they will last longer, and things that are more complex, they will more quickly deteriorate. So the human being is a complex being made up of lots and lots of different elements, and therefore, scientifically, we should eventually, you know, somehow deteriorate. So naturally, the human being would be destined to die at some point. So if that's the pshat in the human being's creation, then what's happening here in this story? It just means that the idea of Mos Tamus in the story of Eitz Hadas is just that because of this chait, you'll be liable to capital punishment, you'll die through your Avera. Not naturally, when you're destined to die from birth, you'll die through the Avera. Very similar to a Zar Huchel Truma, the lacha is if a non-Kohen eats Truma, he's liable to the Misa B'dei Shemayim, which means that Hashem will have him killed before his time. V'shasu Yayin, Mechusar Begadim, lots of examples where we find in the Torah, Misa B'dei Shemayim. Now all these things mean, Shekavana B'hem She'emusu B'cheta, means that the person will certainly die at some point, after 120 years, but Hashem will punish the person earlier if he does these chatayim. When it says that you came from dirt and you shall return to dirt, the very famous pasuk, according to this approach, means betivacha, that's your nature. The nature of a person is that they will return to the dirt. When you do find initially, Adam did have to eat. I mean, let's think about it for a second. If Adam had to eat in Gan Eden, why? We eat to live. Let's say Adam didn't eat. Would he have died? I mean, all these questions are kind of beyond us to even think about. But it's a very simple understanding. Hashem told Adam, eat from all the trees of the garden. Adam had to eat something. So, just very simply, if you're told you have to eat, it seems to be that if you don't eat, you're going to die, because you're not going to have the nutrition in your body that you need, like us nowadays. So, from that approach, Adam would have died anyways, and he went to live forever. And just eating from the Eitz Hadas would have made him chayav misa. He would have been liable to capital punishment from Shemayim prematurely. That's one approach. Then the Ramban brings from the Gemara, Valdas Rabboseinu, based on the work of the words of the Rabbanin, Imolei Shechata Lomeis Olam. The Gemara says that had he not sinned, he would have never died. So that's the Ramban quotes from the Gemara. This is what we are more familiar with. Because the neshama is spiritual and eternal. The neshama doesn't die. And the desire of Hashem at creation was that the human being should be clinging totally to spirituality all the time. So like Lamashal, if you're plugged in to the wall outlet, you don't run out of electricity. Electricity is always running because you're plugged into the source. If you're on battery power, the batteries eventually will run out because you've detached yourself from the source. So Hashem said, initially, you're always connected with the world of spirituality. You're always plugged into the neshama. So therefore, you shall live forever. There's no reason not, because the neshama is eternal and Hashem is eternal. Like we say in Milas V'yaro Kim Kitov, like the Ramban says about Kitov, Kitov gave it an existence, a kiyum. V'daki in our kava morel hefsid ala dask tani amana kibriyahi b'chiyuv. And the Ramban says that the point before that was said by in the scientific approach, that things that are complex beings must eventually deteriorate, well, that's very scientific, but it doesn't bring Amunah into account. Only people who have very small Amunah who think that Hashem is bound to scientific laws will say such a thing. Well, that's actually Amunah. If you have Amunah, Amunah ki ol mechudesh b'chivetz ol kipashid, that everything in the world is created by Hashem's desire, gam akim yebola'ad kelimei chifetz. Hashem could also have you live forever. Even though you're a complex being, it doesn't mean you can't live forever. V'zem is burn. This is clearly true. Imken b'cholchem imen amos tamus. So when it says that you will certainly die on the day you eat from the tree, shalastia ben mavis, it means at that point you'll be liable to death, which means l'tiskayim l'ad b'cheftzi, you'll no longer be eternal. So the Ramban saying that this is the pshat we're familiar with, that once you eat from the Eitz Hadas, it wasn't just that like you're chayav misa and a beis din, it wasn't that you need capital punishment. It was that you went from being an eternal being to a being which will die at some point, because you've changed your whole nature. So now we have to address, so why did Adam have to eat then? Now we said before, Adam had to eat in Gan Eden. Well, if he wasn't going to die, why would he have to eat anything? Let him just don't eat. Like, why are we eating? And the eating was just for enjoyment. Hashem didn't tell him to eat because he had to live. Hashem wanted to give pleasure to Adam. So to Adam, I want you to enjoy all the fruits of the Gan because you'll enjoy them. And I want you to enjoy yourself. And it seems she perished Gan Eden of Lion Bevaram Keman. The Ramban says that it seems to be the fruits of Gan Eden would just be absorbed in the limbs, similar to man. The man was total nutrition, no waste, they didn't have to use the bathroom in the midbar. So the Ramban says the fruits of Gan Eden were of the same nature as the man. It was just total nutrition, they enjoyed it, it went in, it was just good for their body, and finished. But once Hashem had to make a gezeira upon Adam, you have to eat the grass of the fields, you have to go farm. At that point, that caused us to have to deteriorate. Meaning, living in Gan Eden, we could live forever. Once we had to eat naturally produced fruits and vegetables on farms, things like that, that caused our bodies to become more and more inclined to deteriorate, and that caused the death to come closer and closer. So the Ramban gives us, and again, the second approach seems to be the main one, and that's the one I'm familiar with, this approach that we would have lived forever had it not been for the chait. But we do have to understand that eating Gan Eden is interesting. The eating there wasn't meant to give Adam nutrition to live, it was meant just l'oneg, it was just meant to give him joy and pleasure. And that's part of Hashem's chesed to the human being. That I want you to live, and I want you to enjoy yourself living. And then so Hashem gave him fruits just to enjoy himself. Well, I think we'll stop here for the week, and we have a lot more to do. Yeah.